everybody, to Mary Giuliani Live. I am so excited tonight because I have Kathy Brouse right here in the studio with me, and we're going to be talking about her brand new book, Don't Try This Alone, The Silent Epidemic of Attachment Disorder. But before we bring on Kathy, I just want to give you an idea of what the purpose of the show is for those of you that are new. You know, in the late 80s, I really got into my own personal growth, and it was out of hearing other people's stories of transformation and listening to some major thought leaders that really, really helped me transform my life. And so I thought, I'm going to start my own show and bring on some really cool thought leaders to help you transform your life. And so that's why I do this show every week. One way that you should know about being able to access the shows as far as through the replays or upcoming guests is to get on my email list. And all you have to do that is just go up to MaryGiuliani.net, and there's the access show updates and replays on the far right, and just put your name in and you'll get an email every couple weeks with the upcoming guests, as well as the link to the replay of this show if you can't watch the whole show. So another way you can actually see my shows is to sign up for my iTunes channel. And all you need to do is go over to iTunes and look up Mary Giuliani Live, and I'm right there, and you'll get it automatically downloaded into your iPhone. Another cool thing about live streaming is that you can actually ask questions in real time, and Kathy can answer those for you. So how you can ask questions is type them right into the chat area, the comment area in the live stream box, and right below the in Facebook, and I will do my best to get to all of your questions. And if for some reason we run out of time and we can't, Kathy will be available after the show tonight and tomorrow to field any questions that weren't able to be asked. So with that, let's start talking about Kathy. I want to give you a little bit of a backstory on basically how Kathy came across this whole attachment disorder. And so basically how it happened was, I'm sorry, I'm just a little bit off here for a second. And sorry if I'm reading a little bit, but I just want you to get a little bit of the backstory before I bring Kathy on. So in 2006, Kathy faced a divorce from a 27-year marriage to her college sweetheart, leaving her bankrupt, and then moved to California and was followed by the death of both parents, coupled with two bad rebound affairs. So this meant she faced five life disasters in 2 years. And so those crises started her down a path of discovery and healing that she's now able to share with others through her new book. And actually what she realized she was suffering from was an attachment disorder, which is a condition potentially affecting almost half the United States population, caused by traumatic stress in the first 3 years of life. And actually, attachment disorder correlates with the nation's 50% divorce rate and widespread mental health issues, yet no one really is talking about it. And so many people are suffering, and they're going untreated and forced to live with their pain in silence and without a hint of its cause. And that was certainly true for Kathy, but when her initial forays into psychiatric help failed, she decided to treat herself, and it was a mistake that almost cost her life, hence the name of the book, Don't Try This Alone. So with that, I want to bring on Kathy. Come on over, Kathy.
Hey,
welcome.
Mary.
Hi. Good to see you. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome.
Oh, we've got some more people here. Hi.
Yay. Yeah. Well, Kathy, you know, your book totally blew me away. I was laughing through it. I was crying through it.
You're so nice.
Because I could so relate to so much of it, you know. And I think so.
Sorry about that.
Well, you know what? No, but then there's the transformation with trauma, right?
Yeah.
So the good news is that when you work through it, you have a life that's pretty, pretty amazing. So
it feels better, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does.
It feels so much better now.
And so anyway, I just wanted to maybe just start with the preface of your book, which is really going into some of the brain science of attachment disorder. And I thought it would be really helpful for viewers to really get a feel for what that actually looks like, because a lot of people think, oh, it's a psychological disorder and it's really not related to a physical brain issue. So I thought what I would do is actually share an image of a brain scan of a child on the left side. There's two brain scans here on the
Can people see that now?
Yeah, everybody can see it.
Okay.
Everything up there people can see.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and so on the right side of the screen, you'll see two brain scans, and the left brain scan is a normal child's brain, and the right brain scan is a traumatized child's brain. And so I just thought maybe you could enlighten us a little bit about how this actually is the physical reality of what attachment disorder is.
Well, what you're seeing in the scan, folks, is the scan lights up when the neurons are actually firing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And when a baby is born, it needs a stimulation from another human being to fire up the neurons in the brain.
Yes.
And on the left-hand side, you're seeing a child that where just the way that I'm looking at Mary, gazing at her.
Yes.
Or I'm looking at you and I'm gazing at you.
Yes.
And hopefully you had some experience in your childhood of people looking at you and looking into your
right.
eye. And when that happens, it actually stimulates the neurons in your brain to fire.
Okay.
And if you don't get that stimulation, those neurons just don't start firing. They're there, but they don't get stimulated to fire. And as the brain grows, parts of it, if you see this scan on the right-hand side where it says with large parts of the brain are dark,
right.
That's what I found out about me. Parts of my brain were dark because those neurons just didn't fire.
And that's where the white circles are on the brain scan, where you'll see that dark area. Mm-hmm. So they actually, it's an area of your brain that really didn't even develop, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The neurons were there, but they were never stimulated to fire, and the brain does prune neurons between birth and the age 3.
Okay.
The neurons actually get pruned. So if they didn't get stimulated to fire, they didn't grow.
And so what causes a brain to do that? Like, why is it that brain on the right side? And that was a child that was raised in an orphanage, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So what happened that caused that child's brain to not develop properly?
Well, let me come in another way.
Okay.
An adult human head is not going to make it out the birth canal. So
yes.
Consequently, when we're born, we've only got a very primitive part of our brain working. It's called the reptilian brain, and it's the part, it better be working because that's the part of our brain. It's also called the brainstem. And maybe now, can you bring in that other diagram?
Yeah.
It's pink in our beautiful diagram here by Dr. Bruce Perry. At the bottom, the diencephalon and then the pink and the yellow part together are what they call the brainstem.
Right.
And, okay.
Uh-huh.
It's hard for me to tell what's on camera, so...
Yeah.
Is it just the diagram now?
Yes.
Okay. And so, as you can see, hopefully you can read this, the brainstem, and the reason it's got to be working when we pop out, it governs body temperature, heart rate, blood pressure, sleep, all those things that a baby needs to have functioning, just like we don't generally think about how we're breathing or how our heart's beating or whether we're digesting or not. Those are all automatic reflexes. Those are all governed by the brainstem. And if the baby didn't have those functioning when it popped out, it would obviously starve or freeze. So, but we don't have the whole rest of the brain functioning, and that's the point. And we're not reptiles. This is called the reptilian brain because this is the part of the brain we do have in common with reptiles, and this is all the little reptiles need to go about their reptile lives. But we are mammals, and we humans need a lot more than that. And we need the limbic lobe of the brain, which is the part in green here, which enables us to regulate our what they call arousal in the diagram, which just means emotions.
Right.
Emotional reactivity, attachment. We need to be able to relate to the other mammals. And then the blue part on the top is primates develop this big thinking brain, but none of those neurons are firing when we're born, and so the size of the baby's brain triples between birth and age 3.
Right.
And if we don't get that eye contact, back to the slide with the dark parts,
right,
if we don't get that eye contact, our neurons are never stimulated to fire in whole chunks of the brain, and that's why they're not lighting up the screen in the PET scan, positive positron electron emission transmission something, I forget what a PET stands for, but it's just not lighting up because the neurons aren't firing.
And so that's caused by a caregiver that's not really emotionally present or attuned.
On the left, the caregiver was paying attention to the child. It was stimulating the child's neurons to fire. It was looking at the child. When the child cried, the caregiver gave a damn. It held the child. It picked it up. It tried to find out what was going on.
Right.
They tell the story of an African mother who was out working with a sociologist, and she had her baby on her hip, and suddenly she holds the baby up like this, and the baby urinates into the bushes, and puts the baby back at her hip again. The sociologist said, "How did you know to do that?"
Yeah.
And the African mother says, "He was inside me. I know when he's going to."
So she's
his
attuned.
Body, she's attuned. She knows when he's wet that he's wet. He's crying the wet cry.
Right.
She knows when he's hungry, he's hungry. He's crying the hungry cry. And so the more she attunes to him, the more his little neurons are firing, and the more like the baby on the left he's going to look, which he's getting a lot of attention, and eye contact in particular stimulates the brain to fire. And they call that limbic resonance. That's the actual, that limbic lobe that the mammals have, that the reptiles don't have, because reptiles don't have emotions.
Right.
Reptiles don't take care of their young, they eat their young.
Right.
They take care of them, all right, but not the kind of care we want, and it doesn't stimulate their brain cells to grow much. So, or not.
Right.
And I was an or not baby.
And so your mother.
I didn't get that.
So your mother was not able to be present.
Correct.
Because she was highly anxious and, from what I read in your book, very wounded herself.
She had a mother who didn't have those skills.
Skills. Right.
And I've got a chapter in there called The Butt End of Evolution.
Right. So it just comes down to doing generations.
I trace this back to my great-great-grandmother who got thrown in a boat in London at 13, knocked up and shipped off to South Africa.
Right.
And had 13 children in 13 different cities in 4 different continents all over the world.
Wow.
And she, none of those children was going to get any kind of attention from her because she was just trying to stay alive.
Right. So, again, it's almost like it's nobody's fault in a sense.
It's nobody's fault.
Although, it's not to say you shouldn't feel the feeling and then because the whole point of your story is you need to go through the grieving, the loss of that.
Exactly.
Everything. Yeah. So
it's nobody's fault, but it's everybody's responsibility.
I'm going to scoot over
it a
little bit more so I'm in front of my window here with you.
Okay. You scoot where you have.
Okay, cool. So this just illustrates that this is an actual physical brain development disorder, not just a psychological or relational disorder. Of course, it's those two. But that's what we wanted to drive home in the very beginning.
It's both together. It's on the borderline between a psychological and a medical disorder, and it is both.
Right. So then, before we get in, I guess maybe what we could do is get a little bit briefly into your story and then get into the healing, of course.
Okay.
So, you know, you were an overachiever. Tell me about that.
Well, when parts of your brain are dark, parts of mine are, when you don't get that attention very young, what happens is that mammalian lobe, the lovey-dovey attaching, I love you, that lobe, it just doesn't develop.
Right.
And the left side of the brain, which is the side that thinks, isn't supposed to do anything until you're 2 or 3 and you get speech and language and all that good stuff,
right?
But when you don't get the mammalian attachment as at birth or 1 or 2, what happens is the left side overcompensates, and it massively overcompensates, and you get what's called premature ego development.
Oh,
and so,
is that right?
Yeah, there's actually a name for it and everything. And
so it's like you're really mind, but not really heart kind of focused.
It's all the left part of the brain. It's like the CIA hires a lot of deaf people, The CIA hires blind people regularly to do their most sensitive wiretapping because their ears overcompensate for the lack of sight. Their ears actually develop a sensitivity that ordinary people don't have.
Oh, okay.
And I was like that.
Mm.
I was, the right side of my brain wasn't working. I was blind to emotions. I was blind to attachment. I was blind to people skills. I'm still terrible at it, but I'm trying to learn. And a lot of my friends will tell you, Kathy, she's trying hard. But I developed this huge honking left brain. I got a degree in mathematics. I still worked with engineers. I worked with rocket scientists. Right. I learned 5 languages. I have 20 operas in my head in Italian and German, and I speak Japanese fluently and go on. And, and I was pulling in top dollar, working Pentagon contracts and all that kind of thing until I was over 50, and I never knew I was sick. I didn't think nobody ever thought there was anything wrong with my high-performance brain.
Right. Well, and according to our culture, you were like rocking.
I was rocking.
Yeah.
I was bringing in the money. I was performing. I never missed a deadline. The engineers came to me and said, translate this. Make sure that the government can understand it. And I did. And everybody was happy.
So then all of a sudden it all came crashing down when after 27 years, that marriage to your college sweetheart dissolved. And the parents died.
And then my parents started to die.
Yeah.
And you only have 2, but it felt like a whole lot of people died. Because of that lack of the bond. And then I said, well, I married a bad man. He was mean to me. Okay, I'll just find a good man.
Yeah.
So I picked up and I moved myself 3,000 miles from the Washington, D.C. area to California.
All right.
It was lovely. And I started dating right away. And I met, seemed to be some very nice fellows. And it was one more abusive relationship after another.
Yeah.
And finally, one day, I turned to myself and I said, well, wait a minute. Mom wasn't real friendly because she just didn't have the equipment from her mom.
Right.
Dad almost never came home because he was working so hard because you wouldn't want to come home to my mom either. If you had that to come home to. So Dad never came home.
Yeah.
And the first husband didn't come home much. 27 years. Pretty much I was married to my cat, Tom. Tom the cat slept on my shoulder. I was married to my cat. And
but that was sort of normal, though, because of the way you were raised.
At least the cat was there for me.
But when you're in an environment...
At least the cat was there.
Yeah, your parents weren't there for
you, so upset. I'm crying. I'm just kidding.
But it makes sense that you would find it someone normal to have sort of an unavailable husband.
Exactly. And I remember I would say, this isn't a relationship. This is a disease. And I said that before I even knew I was sick, but I didn't do anything about it.
Well, you didn't have the capacity, right?
I hung with it for the last 15 years, and finally I snapped.
Yeah.
When it got financially intolerable, basically. It's all in the book.
Yeah.
You can read about it in my book. And but then I met, first it was Dan, and then it was Bob. And
The two rebound affairs.
And this was a disaster. They were no more emotionally available than my husband had been. And then I took a body count, and I said, okay, mom, not available. Dad, not available. 27-year, first husband, not available.
Right.
Rebound one, not available. Rebound four. Oh, I'm five for zero.
And the common denominator
is one, as Miss Piggy. The day came when I literally took my finger like Miss Piggy and said, oh, moi.
Yeah.
I am the problem. I better find out what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
So, and then my father passed away and I was unable to cry. And
yeah.
I remember I actually sang at his funeral and I sang quite beautifully. And my sister was completely, she said, did you hear that? I know, don't. And I couldn't cry. And I couldn't cry.
I couldn't cry.
And I finally, I said, I need a therapist.
Yeah.
Now, if you ever told me, my level-headed
New Yorker
me, that I would move to California, land of fruit and nuts, I would have laughed my level New York head off. And if you'd ever told me that I would move to California and get a therapist, I would have laughed hysterically. But I knew that something was very wrong. So, okay, move to California, get a therapist because something's wrong with moi. And the problem I ran into is the therapists were even, if possible, less clueless than I was.
Yeah.
Because they kept telling me to look for this inner child.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted.
Well, that's a really common thing for therapists to say.
It seems to be the one-size-fits-all thing that they often do.
Right.
And what happened to me, Mary, was... when I couldn't find an inner child, because I try to obey orders, and, you know, you look
Dr.
For,
Rita in the
Dr.
book.
Dr. Rita, well, there was Dr. Matt, and he'd had me look for an inner child, and that didn't work, but a friend of mine said, well, that's group therapy, you know, you really need to spend some money on this, and I'm like, but I don't have any money, she said, to money or your life, so I said, all right, so then I went and saw Dr. Rita, she said the same thing to me, you need to find your inner child, and I'm like, I can't find an inner child, and she was literally yelling at me to cooperate.
Well, it's like, you're being resistant, which is a very common, like, if you're not getting it in therapy of being resistant.
Right.
But wasn't it really the fact because you didn't have the download from your original infant brain?
Yeah.
When you have an infant brain that's not developed properly, you're not going to find an inner child. Could you share a little bit about that?
Well, what happened was I got on a transcontinental flight from California to go back east to visit my sister one fine day in 2011, and I was stuck with a baby crying about two rows ahead of me for 5 hours.
Oh my God.
And I'm listening to this baby and it's going, eh, ah, ah, ah. And then all of a sudden, I remember my cat hiding under the bed whenever it had an abscess going, meow, wow, wow, wow.
The yowling.
I said, oh, that's what I have inside. It just hit me right there sitting on the plane, stuck with this baby crying. I don't have an inner child inside. I've got something like that two-week-old. It was a serious red infant. I mean, this was not a baby. It was like a newborn. I said to myself, I've got some of that inside. It doesn't have a personnel. It doesn't have language. It doesn't have you can identify a.
Because that never developed in your brain. Because
exactly.
Your mom was not attuned.
She didn't have the equipment because her mom didn't have it, and her mom didn't have it, and this stuff becomes endemic in families.
And just to clarify for our viewers, and I didn't get this until I did a ton of reading on developmental trauma and attachment disorders, is our mothers literally download the template of their brain template into the baby. So if mommy's sick, baby's going to be sick.
And mommy's neurons aren't firing. She has no way to get mine to fire.
Yeah. It's like you can't do the transfer if you don't even have it.
She doesn't have the software.
Yeah. So
I mean, I was driving along on the freeway one day, and I heard Dr. Henry Cloud on the CD, a marvelous psychotherapist we have out here in California. And he said, you know, they can do brain scans of these kids that weren't raised in a warm, loving environment. And he says, and parts of their brains are dark.
And let's go back to that screen. There it is, right there.
Had never seen that screen, but I was driving along on the freeway and I almost drove off an overpass on the 91 freeway.
The first time I saw this brain scan, it blew my mind too. It was like, you know, part of me was like, oh my God, it's not my fault. It wasn't my fault that I had a lot of issues, because those are also areas of the frontal lobe that don't develop properly for impulse control,
exactly.
That don't develop properly for pleasure center. You need more to feel pleasure. That don't develop properly for attention. So you have problems in school. You have attention. I mean, so these are very foundational pieces that that kids get shamed about all the time.
Yes.
And of course, then you add insult to injury because you don't even know that your brain never developed properly. And our culture just beats us up.
The culture expects us to be born full grown from the head of Zeus, fully functional, normal without ever having gotten the software to function?
Right.
I mean, would you take your iPhone and smack it on the desk if you hadn't downloaded the apps and saying, darn you, you know, do X app?
And you'd
download the app, right?
And just for the viewers, I just want to make sure before, because sometimes when you see this information, it can be kind of like devastating, like, oh my God, I'm screwed. But the reality is the brain is extremely plastic and it's wired for healing. So not to worry if you feel like this is something you might be suffering with. I've had a huge, I mean, I've been on my personal growth path for 30 years and just 7 months ago found out that I actually had some brain issues similar to this and have done a lot of really good healing modalities that have made a huge, huge difference. In just 6 months. So
that's amazing.
After reading Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. So, but let's get back to you, Kathy.
I've been at this for 7 years.
Yes.
Look at you in 6 months.
The thing with me is I had done the recovery and the relational kind of stuff, the mind and spirit stuff. I just didn't know my brain had been impacted and that I was still running a hyper-aroused brain for 55 years. So, yes, my brain had calmed down to some degree, but it's calmed down a lot more now that I've been doing a lot of neurofeedback and somatic-based processing and stuff. So you go to these psychotherapists and they're trying to help you find your inner child, even though that you don't even have that capacity because your brain never developed in that area. And so you give up on that, and then you do the grief recovery handbook, right?
Well, what happened was I had a friend whose spouse had passed away, and I was saying, you know, I had lost both parents, and I was saying, but I don't need this grief book. You know, you need this because your spouse passed away.
Right.
And so my friend said, that's ridiculous. This is a book about retraining the emotions, and I knew that my emotions had gone berserk, but I just didn't know why, and I didn't know what it had to do with this inner child stuff. I just knew that the professionals were telling me to look for an inner child, and I couldn't find one.
Right.
So, and the friend says, well, this book will teach you how to heal your emotions, so let's work
the
on this book.
The Grief Recovery Handbook.
Okay. John James and Russell Friedman, a couple of really nice, genius guys. I've had the opportunity to speak with them on the phone even, and just wonderful people.
Right.
And it's a great book, and you're probably going to ask me next, what did I do with it?
You wrote a bunch of letters, right, about forgiving.
One uses the book properly. It really shouldn't be used unsupervised for somebody who is as ill as I was, but of course, nobody knew this at the time, least of all my therapist.
Well, 50% of the population has some form of this.
Exactly.
But nobody knows,
and that's why I've written my book. Don't Try This Alone. It's called The Silent Epidemic of Attachment Disorder. And by the way, my website is attachmentdisorderhealing.com.
Yes.
Simple. Attachmentdisorderhealing.com. You can go there and buy the book there. And it's all right in front of you. And all these blogs and these pictures you've been seeing are right there. But I didn't know any of this. And that was the problem. The other problem was that the therapist I was seeing didn't know any of it either.
Right.
And that was a serious problem. So we began doing this grief handbook. And I kept reading letters over and over. Mom, I forgive you for this, that, the other. Dad, I forgive you for not coming home. I forgive you. I wasn't getting me anywhere. And finally, my friend Sherry said, why don't you try saying what you feel about when mom or dad did XYZ?
Right.
And the minute I started actually saying what I felt, I got rivers of emotions coming up.
Yeah.
But the problem was that the more I did that, I said to myself, all right, well, the first thing I've got to do is forgive my ex for the 27 years because I was only at home for 17 years, but I was with him for 27 years. So let me start with the ex. So I started with the ex, and I essentially regressed myself back to to the age of 18 or 19 that I had been at when I met him.
Right.
I don't know exactly how that happened, but by the more I forgave him, it would appear that I was removing layers of my personality. But then I still didn't feel better because then all of a sudden all this pain about my dad came up.
Yeah.
So then I got a bunch of books and tapes on what's a dad supposed to do for a young child, and there was this whole list of things that a dad's supposed to do. And my dad never did that. Oops. My dad never did that. And it's not his fault. He was out working to put bread on the table. You know, we were poor. He had to go to work, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But I never got any of that software either. So then I wrote dad letters. Dad, I forgive you for da-da-da-da. And by the time I was done with that, I had the voice of a 5-year-old popping up in my head saying, Daddy, I want this. Daddy, I know. It's like, what? Oh, what's that? You know.
Wow.
I said, at one point I said, hey, you know, I sang Joan of Arc in 1986, but this is a little crazy, you know, just hearing voices. No, I don't think so. This is really crazy. And it got worse. And then I started feeling feelings of an infant about my mother.
Wow.
And
your mother was not nice to you.
She just didn't know how to handle a baby. and she hadn't wanted the baby. And
she explicitly said that to you,
didn't she? Basically, no, she just said, she basically would say things like, I love you, but I don't like you.
Yeah, and she would, must have been so hard.
It was hard, I know, but I don't want to go off on her because I had to, the first thing you learn in this vein of work is if we're blaming somebody else, we're not getting it, moi.
Right.
And it's not a question of blaming moi. That's the worst thing we can do.
But we have to feel the pain of it.
We have to go in and feel pain of it. Right. And that was what was so effective and fantastic about the Grief Recovery Handbook, and that is why I will always promote it. However, if you keep
working on it. Yeah.
Well, I had my grief partners.
Right. That's true.
I had Cherry, and I had some other grief partners, and I had all the friends that helped me hold funerals for my marriage and funerals for my for my mom in the book, and it's all described in the book in some detail. But for if you've got a serious attachment disorder like I turned out to have, you don't want to do this unsupervised. And I did do it unsupervised. And I kept doing it unsupervised. And I went on like this for 3 years with these letters until one fine day I found myself on the bedroom floor clutching a stuffed dog with a soggy toothbrush that I had been unable to brush my teeth with. I have a picture of this in the book, you know, with these adult high heels in the picture and the stuffed dog and the soggy toothbrush. And I'm lying there saying, I'm not old enough to be dropped off at school. I'm not. I now had to go to work. And the Marines were expecting me at a concrete pour at the Seal Beach Marine Base. You know, I was supposed to be there helping them pour the concrete in my hard hat. And I'm lying on the floor with a stuffed dog saying I don't have enough wherewithal inside to be dropped off at school. I mean, that's
how young you were regressed to.
I was, and I did it to myself. And that was, I'll never forget that. The next morning, I was back looking for a therapist.
Yes.
But this time, I knew that I was not going to accept just this inner child one size fits all. And I know that inner child work is very good for a lot of people.
Right.
Sorry. Allergies. I know that it's very good for a lot of people, but for those of us who only have an inner yowling infant id on the plane, it's just...
This is like pre-verbal.
Exactly.
This is pre-verbal. There's no inner child to conceive.
There's no personality. There's no nothing. It's since the sperm hit the egg, it's been a mess.
Right.
The cell divisions have been off.
Right.
So it was when you... I've got a lot of blogs on my website about how to hire a therapist, how to interview the therapist. Very first thing, you must find one with a lot of compassion. And I could tell you right now, the first two didn't have that because they just wanted me to fit their one-size-fits-all. Find that inner child or you're the problem. You're the broken widget.
And Dr. Rita wanted you to do it alone. So
that was her other thing,
And it was like, that's the other piece that I want to get into, is that this work needs to be, we're wounded in relationship, and so we need to heal in relationship.
Exactly.
And I mean, and so, and we need each other. We need this eye-to-eye limbic resonance or co-regulation, right? Mm-hmm. So so then the therapist that you decided to go for was attachment-based therapist. In other words, a therapist that can really attach to a client, right? Like emotionally attach.
He would never say, my new therapist, Dr. R, would never say the kinds of things that Dr. Rita used to say about, you know, go heal yourself alone. You don't need a man. You don't need this. And I'm like, okay, I don't need a man, but how about, you know, a woman's group,
a
church pastor, a rabbi, I don't care. Some human being. And she was like, no, go do it alone. A real therapist will never say that to you.
Yeah.
Somebody who actually knows trauma will know that you need that eye contact, that limb resonance.
So then what I'm hearing is that for people that are watching, you need to find a therapist who's trauma-informed and also who is understands attachment disorders and knows how to heal those has done their own work.
Very important.
And Dr. R had done his own work.
He had faced just terrific trauma from childhood, dealing with tornadoes and all kinds of scary things we don't have in New York.
Right.
And he had walked through his own trauma and felt it. And the problem is that trauma is very scary and we can't heal it unless we feel it. And we think the feeling it's going to kill us, but it won't. It actually saves our lives.
Right.
If we've got another mammal there.
And that's what
the key thing.
That other book that I thought was fantastic, and I've read it since you put it in the General Theory of Love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Can you say a little bit about that so people...
Well, that's where I first found out about the three parts of the brain.
Oh, okay.
And Bruce Perry came along with that nifty slide that we showed before, but the General Theory of Love is written by three psychiatrists out of San Francisco, and they say that the problem with America today is that we are trained to achieve and not to attach.
Yes.
And that says it all right there.
Yep.
That we're trained to perform it. Look at me. I was performing in 5 languages.
Right.
I was performing great.
I bought into it. I mean, literally, for me, from the time I was like 28 till I was about 50, that was it. It was an accomplishment, acquisition. And then finally, I'm like, this is not it. I mean, accomplishment can only give you what accomplishment can give you. It can't give you the feeling of love in your heart by connection to another person.
No way.
And we need that.
That's, we're dead without it. We really cannot survive without it.
Exactly. And that's what I learned. It was like, it's like connecting with people and having those deep attachments is like, it's not like just a nice to have. It's an absolutely have to have. We need each other.
I'll never forget what Henry Cloud says in his book. You know, you can live very well without street drugs, sex, money, this, that, the other, but you cannot live without attachment.
At least happily.
And I threw the book at the wall. I took the book. But he was right.
Yeah.
You cannot live without attachment.
Right. So then just to briefly kind of touch on, what I thought was important for viewers to see is that you realize that your relationship with these men, and even your ex-husband, was really like an adrenaline addiction to cover up your childhood pain. Could you speak a little bit about that? Because this show is really about how to have more intimate relationships. And so what was it about the way you were using relationships to mask your pain, and how are you doing it now in a more healthy way?
Well, there again, I owe what I know about this to an author expert. Robin Norwood is the author of a book called Women Who Love Too Much. It's a New York Times bestseller, and somebody at Codependence Anonymous handed it to me one fine night, and I took it home, and it was among those books that I just couldn't put down until I read the thing until dawn, and I said, oh my God, I'm a certified codependent. And she actually describes millions of women are in abusive relationships because they had a childhood where the parents couldn't connect for one reason or another.
Because of their attachment order.
And they are trying now, that they're trying to use the relationship to, like she called it, go back and fix it. They're restaging the childhood drama in order to try to, because
to get
brain,
it right.
The brain wants completion.
Right.
And when we couldn't get a complete relationship with the parent, the brain is wanting to go back and fix it. And so towards the end of the book, she compares the adrenaline rush that we get from this to the rush that an alcoholic gets from alcohol. And she actually has a chart showing how that adrenaline and the alcohol will cause exactly the same symptoms in the body. It will destroy body parts. It will destroy your kidneys. It will destroy various body functions. And in the end, it will kill you. And I said to myself, well, I guess this is not optional. I have to stop using men.
For your drug of choice.
For my drug of choice. She says it's an addiction. Literally, we fix, quote, like a cocaine addict fixes with cocaine. We're literally fixing with a man. That's her quote.
Right.
Dr. Robin Norwood. That was awful.
So you went through withdrawal and everything, just like an alcoholic.
I had to go cold turkey on dating, and I was on 16 websites, Match.com, and Harmony, and Chemistry, and on Harmony, Plenty of Fish, and Craigslist before the Craigs Killer. Oh, I was everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, at one point I was at, went on, what was it, 38 I have one chapter called 38 First Dates.
Yeah.
Because it was all the same every single time. I was just finding one more nutty guy after another.
Because
the way my brain was wired, their brains were wired that way too.
Yeah.
So we attracted to each other.
And that's what they talk about in the general theory of love, the attractors.
Right.
And like our brains, literally, if they're still trauma-based, if they haven't healed, you don't have any choice but to be attracted to unhealthy people.
Exactly.
And so heads up for everybody, do your trauma healing work. And Kathy's going to give us a bunch of resources too. We need to get into those right now, actually, because we're getting close here. So you went through and gave up your addiction to men.
Yeah, it was so hard.
Yeah.
But I did it.
Yeah, you did it. And what I got is you learned the good pain from the bad pain. Can you speak about that?
Well, I had been indulging the whole time that I was addicted to this adrenaline and romance nonsense. And by the way, this is not just something that happens to women. It happens to men, too. There are plenty of very nice codependent men out there who are addicted to abusive women. It's not a sexual issue at all. It's not a gender issue.
Right.
Okay? It happens all the time. It's just that women are a little more famous for it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I get communications from men all the time that are having the same problem on the website.
Yeah.
So if you keep doing it, if I were to, just for one example, if I were to keep allowing a Bob, say, the second abusive rebound guy, if I keep allowing him to call me, you know, I keep answering his calls, I get a relief every time I take a call because, oh, at least he called me. Oh, at least he
asked
me to dinner.
You get the dopamine hit, right?
You get the relief, but your neurons are wiring still back in the bad old pattern that you had in childhood. And so you're not actually healing what's hurting you in your brain.
Right.
And so I called that bad pain because it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And the more I would keep seeing seeing men, right. My attractors were messed up, my brain patterns were messed up. The more I would keep seeing men, I would attract abusive men, just like, because all I knew was abuse. I would just keep rewounding the same old trauma over and over and over and over again.
So re-traumatizing.
Just re-traumatizing, but that's bad pain. There's no end to it. Whereas when I went cold turkey, because at one point, Dr. R, bless his heart, said to me, you got to fold the phone on Bob. And I said, can't do that. He said, you don't have to like it. You just have to do it.
But you didn't have to do it alone. You had him.
I had him. But also, trust me, if I hadn't been paying him $130 an hour to tell me to do it, I never would have done it.
Yep.
And that's the other good point about therapy.
Yep.
It should cost you money. Good therapy should cost you. It's your money or your life.
Yep.
Honestly. Wow. And so I did it, and I had enormous pain. I was sick as a dog 3 days. And after 6 months, I was so better.
Because you let yourself feel the pain that it was
exactly,
masking, right?
I let myself feel the pain from childhood. I had to go back, you know, right. And I coined this term, move the tail, because one morning I woke up and I said, all right, so I folded the phone on Bob, and I'm feeling all this pain, and I'm like, wait a minute, Bob's going to die, or I'm going to die, or somebody's going to, feeling like somebody's going to die. I feel like, wait a minute, everything I'm feeling about this guy must act, I only met him 2 years ago. This must be something I'm actually feeling about my dad.
Right.
This must actually be, how could I have feelings this deep about someone I just met 2 years ago? And I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to move the tail. I'm going to take these emotions, and instead of pinning them on Bob, who's some stranger that I met 2 years ago, I'm going to move that tail from the Bob donkey to the dad donkey. I'm going to take all these emotions that I think I'm feeling about Bob and pin them on my dad and see what that feels like.
Yeah.
And floodgates, rivers of dad grief came pouring out. It was just enormous. The relief was insane.
Yeah.
And also that was one of the things that sent me back into psychotherapy, that because it went so deep,
yes,
that I literally couldn't do it alone anymore.
Right.
I mean, as I'm telling some of this out of order, but in the book, it's all, trust me,
right.
It's in chronological diary order, so that the only way to make sense out of it literally reads like a diary, because it is.
Well, let's talk a little bit, since we're getting close to the top of the hour here,
sure.
About how you did a lot of really good body-based somatic work, and how I have a note here on re-traumatization, where it says, when talk therapy fails and body pain increases, we need somatic work to heal.
Exactly.
So
even with Dr. R,
mm-hmm.
just talking about it actually wasn't enough. So I went out and I got this fantastic little book called Healing Trauma by Dr. Peter A. Levine, who's the founder of Somatic Experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several schools of thought that do this. Dr. Pat Ogden does the sensory motor psychotherapy. She's also quite excellent. But I was attracted to Levine's book because it's got a CD in the back with Levine speaking exercises that you do.
Right.
And I don't want to ruin my book for you, but I'll just tell you, I started doing those exercises in the Peter Levine CD, and my entire body exploded. Just physically, my body exploded.
Could you like to explain, what do you mean by that exploded?
I don't know if we have enough space in here for me. I had to get on the elliptical machine in my living room.
Oh, so you had all this energy.
I had all this energy, and it was all about wanting to kill someone, literally. My body had been wanting to kill someone.
Because you were so angry.
Since the sperm hit the egg, there was so much anger, and to feel it was never allowed.
Yeah.
And I jumped on that elliptical and just went berserk for about 20 minutes, and then I felt like $1 million, and this happened to be a Sunday night, so the next day I had an appointment with Dr. R, which was always every Monday, and I went and I told him what happened, and he said, from now on, you bring that CD in here.
Do not do this alone.
Do not do this. God bless him.
Yeah.
And so the CD has 12 tracks, and we did for more than 12 weeks, because sometimes we would, in an hour, a therapy hour, we'd only get into 30 seconds or literally half a minute of one Levine track. But it just released enormous amounts of pent-up rage, sorrow, grief, all kinds of, but it was never going to work if I did it myself. And Levine says that. He says, never try to do these exercises alone.
And so
he's really clear about it.
And so when we talked about the brain, how, you know, the holes in the, you know, the dark places in the brain, part of getting the download of what you needed when you were an infant was actually happening through your relationship with that
Dr.
R, right?
Exactly.
Because he was a safe, attuned.
We're supposed to be able to go to the parents and go, and feel all this stuff. But if the parent freaks out,
right,
when you feel the stuff, then you never get to feel it.
Like my mom was.
But it doesn't go away. It's still in there.
Right. Like you had said, your mom was anxiety personified. Very similar, my mom. And it wasn't her fault. But still, when you're a baby and you are trying to feel a connection to your mother and she's like really tense, it can really send you into shock.
Well, both our moms had a really tough childhood, and they didn't have the wherewithal to do any better. And they put food on the table, and they called us and they changed us when they knew they did the best they could. They didn't have the equipment.
So did you feel a sense of relief just knowing that, oh my God, this was never my fault?
Massively.
Me too.
And it comes very slowly.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
But the problem is that I don't know how it's going to work for you. All I know is that I had to feel all that pent up rage. I had
grief.
To feel all that anger. And then there came a day when all of a sudden I was literally cursing my mother to the skies driving down the freeway, and I turned off at my exit. And in a flash, I was crying. I love my mommy. I want my mommy. And she passed away in 2008. I had never said such a thing in my life. Love my mommy. I want my mommy. Not me. No, thank you. No.
So that was because you
I had felt through the good pain.
Ah.
And at the bottom of the good pain, because we're mammals, says Dr. Art, there's always that attachment.
Wow. This is the piece that I want everybody to get, that there is a level of transformation by working through trauma. And that's when, before we get there, I just want to talk about doing the polar bear discharge and how it took a long time to get this traumatized. It's going to take more than a few months to heal. And so, you know, we live in this quick fix, five steps to healing trauma.
Forget it. No.
But it's going to take some time.
It took me, just to work through that Levine book, the grief letters took 3 years. And a lot of my friends say, even though I did them unsupervised and I never should have done that, blah, blah, a lot of my friends think that if I had not used that grief handbook to peel off these layers of denial, that I might not have gotten as far as I did. And Dr. R, when I walked in there, he said, yeah, you know, we don't usually see people coming in here as regress back to childhood as you regress. He said, when you do something, you do it pretty thoroughly, don't you? And I went, pretty thoroughly. But the same thing had to go on with the somatic healing. And I talk about the polar bear dance because Dr. Levine, Peter A. Levine, likes to show this video, the National Geographic video of a polar bear who's been chased. And the polar bear doesn't know that the biologists who are chasing him with the helicopter are trying to help him by shooting him with a little dart so that they can tag his ear and watch over him and take care of him and stuff. So the polar bear goes in, is shot with the dart, and it blanks out. And when it comes out of the anesthesia, it starts doing running motions with its legs and kicking and biting over its shoulder and recapitulating all the things it was doing to try to flee the assailant.
When it
went into freeze. It has to discharge all that fight flight energy that was in its body when it was running.
Right.
That's what I had to do.
We're mammals.
It's crazy.
That's what we have to do.
It's really crazy.
But our culture doesn't really find it that acceptable, so we just hold it in.
Culture finds it completely unacceptable, and that's why you have to go to a therapist that understands it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say Dr. R was an attachment and a trauma specialist, but he didn't know anything about body work, and we learned how to do it together.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can, please, folks, if you think you have anything remotely like this, don't try it alone. Find a really good psychotherapist. You can go on my website, attachmentdisorderhealing.com, and I've got a whole page on how to find the right kind of attachment-based therapy.
Right.
Not attachment therapy, but attachment-based psychotherapy, and I explain the difference on there. But the physical release will be huge. And if the therapist you find is not familiar with the somatic experiencing and the polar bear dance and all of that, you need to show them Levine or Pat Ogden's work or the work of somebody like that. And if they're any good, that will be also a test how compassionate they are.
Well, and make sure that they've done their work.
They'll want to learn it if they hadn't. Like Dr. R was ecstatic to learn it.
Cool.
He learned it with me. We went back to grad school together.
Cool. Well, and the other thing, and so the beauty of all this work you've done is that the awakening that you experienced of feeling better than you've ever felt. And so could you speak about just how you totally, the chocolate donut moment in the book?
Well, this moment came when I walked out of church and sat down on a bench overlooking the ocean behind the church, and a friend handed me a half of a chocolate donut because we're always watching our weight so we can stay in nice bathing suits. And I start eating this chocolate. It has some frosting on it or something. And I start eating this donut, and I'm looking at the donut, and I'm looking at the ocean, and I'm looking at the sun on the water, and I'm like almost imagining as though I had, suddenly I'm imagining I'm seeing God's face on the water in the sunlight reflected on the ocean. I look up my friend and I said, this is the most delicious half a chocolate donut I have ever tasted in my entire life, and it took me like 20 minutes to eat it.
Yeah.
And I realized, and my friend happened to have a degree in various things related to this, said to me, you know, if parts of your brain were dark, that slide again, and now they're coming online because you got the attachment and the eye contact and the limbic resonance from Dr. R and from your friends, Sherry and your grief partner and all these people who are so kind to you as to listen to those grief letters for all those years they let you read you those letters, because now if parts of your brain are coming online that were dark before, you're going to experience experience the input of your five senses as you never have before. You're going to experience taste as you never. You're going to see things the way you haven't seen them before.
So now you have a brain on the left.
Now I have a brain. I'm filling in the holes. Yeah, their growth is.
Yeah.
There's life on planet Brouse.
Well, that's amazing.
Stuff is starting to fire.
And that's what I've noticed, too. And just.
You said to me something about how you've got, a range of emotion now is more like 90%?
My range of emotion was like a 5 out of 10, and now it's like a 10. And I'm not just feeling feelings, but just experiencing sensations. And it's like you don't realize how muted you are.
Exactly.
And once you start doing this work. And the other thing I want to mention that, Peter Levine talks about the trauma. There's an awakening where there's actually a recovering a sense of wholeness. There's new levels of energy become available when we release trauma from the brain, mind, and body. I have totally experienced that.
Yeah.
I am more energized. I used to have to drink a ton of caffeine just to get through the day. And now it's like, I can't even hardly drink it because I'm already naturally energized. But I didn't realize how much that undischarged trauma was like dragging my system down to where I felt like I needed that boost.
Having trauma, thank you for bringing that up. Having trauma in our system and not discharging it is the most exhausting thing a person can live with.
Yes.
And that's why a lot of people, they say take it to the grave. And that's one.
Well, the ACEs study talks. That's
why
the ACEs study, right?
The ACEs study is correct, because if people are holding all that trauma in.
That childhood,
And it's not being released, it is damaging body parts.
Well, it's that toxic stress, the hyper-aroused brain. It's like your body finally is like, I can't take it anymore. I'm getting sick because I'm just swimming in cortisol.
It literally eats body parts. I mean, it'll cause every, Dr. Felitti and the ACE study have demonstrated, it causes all 10 of the top non-communicable lethal diseases in the United States. Heart disease, cancer.
Right, exactly. And all the addictions are trauma-based.
Exactly.
And so thank God we know, though, now. We've got the brain science. And I just want you to share that one part in the last part of the book where you're running on the beach, and just give our viewers a little feel for what was that like for you?
I don't even know how to. I want to run to show you what it's like, but that's very hard to do it in a confined space with me. But I got a phone call from my best friend Cynthia back east. I describe this in the book, and when we have this attachment issue, and very often you hear this in Al-Anon or places where people come with addictions, and they say, "I just don't feel like I belong."
Yeah,
just don't feel like I belong.
Yeah,
and that was my feeling my whole life, like I never belonged. Why? Because I'm such an oddball with all these emotions, and the only time I could really get them out as if I sang a really loud Beethoven aria, right, or something. And otherwise, the emotions that I had were completely unacceptable, and so I never belonged anywhere, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this, and she calls me up, and we were talking about some scientific something, because that's what we used to do, and she says, "You know, you belong to me." And we rang off, and I'm sitting there. I turned a corner. I live down by the Salt Creek Beach now, and I turned a corner on the beach, and down the path to the beach, and I got to suddenly where I could see the ocean, and I could see the beautiful birds of paradise flowers, and, I'm just not used to that. I'm from New York City. I'm used to concrete and just this whole expanse of tropical foliage, and I'm looking around. I'm saying, I have this 180-degree view of the most gorgeous place in the world, and I'm looking, and I'm saying, I remember when I thought I saw God's face in the ocean. I see the sun shining on the ocean. Again, I see the flowers, and I've got my friend's voice. Key thing, I didn't do it alone.
Right.
I've got my girlfriend's voice ringing in my ears saying, "You belong. You belong to me." She's 3,000 miles away, but I still belong to her. Okay? I went running for that ocean like an arrow shot from a bow. I just went, my whole body just went running for that ocean, and I was listening to a particular Mendelssohn piece, and I just went berserk running up and down the beach. I couldn't stop running. I had so much energy to release that it was amazing. And I was only listening to this one-third movement over and over and over again. And finally, after about 40 minutes, I figured I'd be too tired. I got, all right, that's enough already. Go back. Go get some lunch or something, right? And so I turned it on to listen to the symphony from the beginning, and the whole thing started all over again. And there I was, another 40 minutes, right? It's a 40-minute symphony, not just that one movement. And I just, the energy was just astonishing. It was a vast physical release of stuff that had been in there, for decades.
Yeah.
And that's why the last page of my book is a picture of this beach I was running on that I cooked myself. And I tell you, folks, it hurts a lot to walk through this trauma, but you will never trade how you're going to be able to live in the feeling, a full feeling of all of your feelings that you weren't allowed to feel or even couldn't feel your whole life, than how, if you have trauma now and you've been started to figure it out, if you've been looking at the ACE study, if you've been looking at acesconnection.com, which is the website for the ACE study, if you've been looking at my website, attachmentdisorderhealing.com, if you've been reading Mary's stuff, it's worth it. You're worth it. You are worth it. And it's not just, you know, L'Oreal or something. You are worth it. Your soul is worth this healing, and you will feel so much better.
I feel better than I've ever felt in my life, ever.
I mean,
physically, emotionally, spiritually.
How I feel now to how I felt at 16, and I'm like, I don't want to go back and be 16 and be in that hell.
Right.
No way. I feel like $1,000,000.
Yay. Let me give you a hug. That's so awesome. Let me just say, this book, you guys have to get it.
Oops.
Don't try this at home. Alone.
That's okay.
The Silent Epidemic of Attachment Disorder.
That's my book.
You can find it on Amazon.com, Kindle, or paperback. And it was so amazing. I cried through it. I laughed through it. It took me 4 days to finish it because I couldn't stop reading it. So it's a beautiful story. And if you've ever had any kind of issues with childhood loss, childhood trauma, addictions, this book will speak to it. So
that's what the reviewers say. I have 8 reviews now.
Yeah.
On Amazon, 5-star reviews, and they all say, I couldn't put it down. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's really that. Well,
I didn't even know what I had done, honestly.
And you've got an amazing wit and a humor, and just anyway, but get the book. How can people reach you, and where are the resources?
Just go to my website, attachmentdisorderhealing.com.
Okay.
Put a comment at the bottom of any page, and I will find you.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. And also, you can reach us on Facebook, right?
Yes.
I'm just Facebook at Kathy Brous, KathyBrous. It's real simple. Yeah. And you are?
Well, Mary G. Coach on Facebook.
On Facebook.
And also, obviously, my website, MaryGiuliani.net. So with that, I want to thank you so much for your interview and for your healing. And I mean, this is an amazing journey that is so inspirational. And it feels so good to have a friend that can, you know, I can relate to. And so thank you for being here.
Thank you for being patient enough to walk through all this.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, everybody.
Good night.
Go visit Kathy Brous. Brous's attachmentdisorderedhealing.com. Yes. All right. Let me just scooch over here a little bit, and we're going to have a couple of announcements, and then we're going to wrap up. By the way, I want to thank you so much for all the people that showed up in the chat area. If you have any questions for Kathy, she actually will be reviewing the Facebook video post and be responding to those. So, wow, that was such a great interview. So every time I do a show, I do a coaching challenge, and I like to line it up with my speaker or my guest. And so the challenge this week is to use, I love the Kathy's metaphor, move the tail. And so in other words, focus on one close relationship that you have stress over and move the tail to the original injury. So in other words, if you're having issues with a spouse or a best friend or a work person, take a look at what that issue is really about, and it probably will go back to mom or dad. And I want to say that don't try it alone. Find a trusted friend or qualified therapist to discuss it with. Get the book. You've got to get the book. You just have to get the book. And then start your journey. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And so doing this kind of work is, you know, if you're willing to feel the sting of the pain just for a few minutes at a time, you're going to have the joy of living a life that is present and expansive and joyful. And you get to have really good relationships because you've rewired your brain for healthy relationships. So, and the other thing is go to acesconnection.com. It's a website that's all about healing childhood loss and adversity. And I'm the Orange County Regional Manager, so join my particular community, and you can stay updated on all the things that are going on in Orange County. So as far as next month, my show, I'm doing my monthly Conscious Conversation Salon, and I'm really excited about this topic because I'm going to be sharing a part of my story I haven't shared that much really online, and basically what it's about is how food addiction and obesity are trauma responses. And for those of you that might not know this, I used to weigh 310 pounds. And I struggled with food addiction from the time I was 5 years old. And I have a level of freedom around food, my body and weight that I've never really dreamed possible. And I really want to get the word out there that When you heal childhood trauma, you can really heal food addiction and obesity. And I would love to support you in that. So please join me on Wednesday, May 2nd. And let's see, is there anything else we want to talk about here? Well, of course, my last thing, which is, what is one thing that you're going to do this week to be true to you? And when you do that, your life will open up and amazing things will start happening. So thanks for being here, everyone, and have a beautiful 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.